Our first case for argument is Limestone Development Corporation versus Village of Lamont. Mr. Wimmer.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel for the defense. My name is John Wimmer, and I'm here on behalf of Limestone Development Corporation. As the court is aware, the district judge dismissed our amended complaint under Rule 12b-6. And what I'd like to do is address the three reasons that the district court gave for doing that. And to the extent that I have time, I'll get into the additional grounds raised by the appellees in an effort to sustain the judge's ruling. The first basis, or that I've addressed in a brief anyway, was the district judge's conclusion that the amended complaint had failed to adequately plead enterprise under RICO. Predicate acts certainly have to be pleaded with the specificity required by Rule 9 because there are acts of wire fraud and mail fraud. But the existence of the enterprise itself, the RICO enterprise, is governed by the notice pleading regimen of Rule 8, which requires only a short and plain statement of the claim showing that...
But what is the enterprise? How does it differ from a conspiracy?
Judge, the enterprise that we've identified consists of the Village of Lamont.
No, that's just naming the parties. What is the enterprise is distinct from just a conspiracy? Does it have a structure? Does it have a leader?
Well, I think it has those three entities, and it's like...
No, you keep saying, look, that's not my question. The question is, what is the structure? What is the enterprise? Is there a management team? Is there a hierarchy or what?
There's certainly a management team for each of them in this.
Of course, yeah. But I'm talking about the enterprise. What is the management of the enterprise? If you asked what is the management of General Motors, you wouldn't say, well, there are five divisions and each of them has a manager, right?
That's right.
What makes them a coherent enterprise?
Well, I mean, it's similar to the Masters case that Your Honor wrote, where you had two...
Get the Master case. Answer this case. What is the leadership structure in this?
Well, the leadership structure is that you have individuals who have positions with these three different enterprises.
Yeah, you keep going back to the three. Who is the boss of the whole thing?
I don't know that there's a boss, Judge. And I don't think there has to be a boss.
What is it that differentiates an enterprise from a conspiracy?
Well, one of the cases we cited, Judge, if the court will bear with me, is the case of, I think it's United Energy Owners Committee versus United States Energy Management Systems, where there was a group of corporations which was alleged to be the enterprise. And the court said the fact that any one of those corporations engages in legitimate activity other than the conspiracy is sufficient to give it...
You're not answering my question.
I'm sorry, Judge. I'm not trying to be difficult.
What is the organizational structure of the enterprise?
Well, we don't know all the details as to how the three municipal corporations were worked together, but I don't think, Judge, that I have
to... On this case for many years. Why don't you know anything about what the enterprise is?
Well, I know about the enterprise, Judge, and there's evidence that we've pleaded in the complaint that indicates that the municipal corporations were used together, including Mr. Porter's statement in 1998 that the Village of Lamont and the Park District were going to chew up Terry Regan and spit him out and use his property, which is an admission by the defendant that these two municipalities were working together in some sort
That's
of
called
enterprise.
A conspiracy. That's called a conspiracy.
Judge, I think the conspiracy involved the individual defendants. The enterprise is the
conspiracy
municipal
with organizations. Are you saying any time two organizations act together, there's an enterprise?
Not any time, Judge, but...
What is it that distinguishes this from a conspiracy between corporations?
The fact that you... I mean, it's indistinguishable from the cases that I cited, I believe, where there was a group of municipal corporations. That's the Cianci case. And then the Blinder case, where there was a group of private corporations, and there were individuals associated with them that basically hijacked those legitimate businesses and used them as an as a RICO enterprise. All I have to do in the pleading, Your Honor, I believe, is make it plausible that this consisted of an enterprise.
I don't think it's plausible. You've just named three companies that you think were, or three entities that you think were cooperating. That sounds like a conspiracy rather than an enterprise.
And I also, Judge, if you look at the complaint, there's also an indication that Porter, the last set of predicate acts in 2003, which involved promising Limestone that they were going to have a realistic appraisal done of the property, which would serve as a basis for negotiations of the sale to either the Lamont Park District or Lamont Township.
Can you talk a little bit about the injury here? It looks like the injury you're claiming in this present suit is the same as the injury that you were claiming in others, and there's 15 years worth of litigation.
Yeah. I think that the fallacy
of different?
Yeah, I think the fallacy of that is it's the same type of injury but different in time. In other words, if I injure you and delay your development of the property in the year 2000, it's a different injury than if I do it again to you in the year 2003. Do you have additional carrying costs that are paid in 2003, additional real estate taxes?
Well, this, are you talking, is this additional injury the one inflicted by this brochure about Heritage Quarries Park?
That and the...
How could that have caused an injury?
Well, Judge, I think when you're trying to market your property and the village comes out with a statement indicating that next summer there's going to be a visitor center. I mean, you're trying to sell your property to someone that might want to make money on it, put up condos or something, and the village comes out with a publication indicating that next summer there's going to be pathways and amenities and a visitor center in the middle of the property, I think that makes it difficult to market your property.
What is it? You read this to mean that the village is claiming to own your property, or what?
Control, because if you look at there's a map attached to the amended complaint, and there's a consumer's quarry as depicted over here in these lakes.
Yeah.
This is my client's property where they've got a visitor center.
Well, how can they put a visitor center on your property?
Well, that's the point. It indicates that they're claiming some kind of ownership interest in the property. And they
Have they registered that? Is that in the chain of title of the property?
Of course not, because it was
fraudulent. Well, of course not. Yeah. Then why is it a cloud on your title?
It's a difficulty in marketing. It may not be a cloud.
I understand you. Yeah. You say to the person you want to sell it to, we own this property, and go look in the chain of title. You'll see we own it. So what's the problem?
Well, the problem is that, you know, not all buyers are...
Oh, come on. Nobody buys a big property without looking without doing a title search.
Oh, I understand that, Judge, but with all respect, I think a lot of people would walk away from it if they saw that...
Because of this brochure?
If they saw that the village was claiming to own it and that there were going to be...
It doesn't say it claims to own it.
Well, that the village is going... How can you put up condos on a property if the village has...
If they don't file anything in the registry office, then they have no claim.
You can thwart the development of property without committing without committing slander of title in the recorder of deeds office, Your Honor. You're dealing with the practicalities of the way businessmen act, and someone seeing this is say, I'm not going to get involved in that project or that land.
Do you have an adequate pattern here? I think that's a question. You only have one victim, one scheme, presumably, one injury, or you have a long period of time over which this thing operated, but what else is there to satisfy the pattern requirement?
Well, Judge, I think in terms of pattern, come into the language of there's two cases really that support the notion that this is a pattern, and one is the H.J. case that indicates that you can prove a closed-end pattern by continuity over a closed period by proving a series of related predicates.
Why did you wait so long to bring your RICO claim?
That's a good question, Judge. I wasn't involved in it until, you know.
Well, why did your predecessor take so long?
I don't know the answer to that, Judge. I see my time. I'm into my rebuttal time, so unless Your Honor is having
more. Isn't this case very much like the Gamboa case?
Judge, I think it's more like the Morgan versus Bank of Waukegan case, which this court had reaffirmed since then, where you had predicate acts committed over a four-year period of time involving three separate schemes in one victim. But here you've got a 10-year period of time. We've got five separate schemes, and I think I pleaded two victims, including the State of Illinois Department of Commerce and Community Affairs, which would not have issued the grant money to the Village of Lamont if they hadn't presented the fraudulent appraisal.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wimmer.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Bersani?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Mike Bersani. I represent the Village of Lamont and the individual Lamont defendants, along with my co-counsel, Russell Hartigan, also present here today is Louis Arricchio on behalf of K.A. Steel, although I'll be presenting the argument on behalf of all the appellee defendants in this case. Your Honors, it's our position that the District Court correctly dismissed Limestone's amended complaint with prejudice in its entirety, based primarily on the statute of limitations defenses that
now
we asserted.
Let me ask you a question about the statute of limitations. The principal injury here, it seems to me, is the effort to drive the purported effort to drive the value of this property down so it would sell below market value. Now, wasn't that injury properly measured from the point when the sale took place, which was in 2003, and that's within the statute of limitations?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. If you look at the accrual standard is when the plaintiff knew or should have known that it was being injured.
Well, he didn't know that until the sale took place, did he?
No, I don't think the sale is the operative factor. Certainly that's a lingering effect of the injury that Limestone allegedly suffered back as early as 1992. But if we give
What did he suffer in at that point?
In 1992, Limestone claimed that, according to its amended complaint, that the Village of Lamont and K.A. Steel were attempting to thwart the development of the property, were harming its development rights and property rights. Even if you go forward in time to 2000, when the alleged sham condemnation action was filed, in that proceeding, and we attached transcripts from that proceeding, Limestone's attorney said at that time, in challenging the village's authority to condemn the property, that Limestone could no longer afford to carry the property due to the village's attempts to thwart development for over 10 years. That's a statement made in that condemnation proceeding in January of 2000. In their complaint, they allege, in relation to that particular predicate act, that the defendants were tying up the property so Limestone would fail, its lenders would commence foreclosure, and either the village or the park district would acquire the property.
Do you think they knew what the damages were going to be at that point, or weren't they pretty speculative until they actually tried to sell the property?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. They could have sued at that time based upon an estimation of what they believed at that time was their loss of value. They didn't do that. That was certainly calculable at that time. As the court said in Rotella, it's when they knew or should have known of their injury, and they knew of that injury back in 2000. And if you compare those allegations of what they knew then with what they allege in 2003.
I don't think that's speculation to
no.
guess what
no.
you're going to get for your property.
I think that businesses.
Before you sell it.
No, I think that businesses, when they believe that the value of their property has been harmed, that they can present competent evidence as to an estimation of what those damages are. I think that can be done. That's when they knew their injury was at that particular time. Even if you go beyond the statute of limitations argument, there are some fundamental problems with the claim that they've attempted to assert on under civil RICO. In particular, Your Honor mentioned the Gamboa case, and that was highlighted in our brief. In the Gamboa case, this court said that where a complaint presents a distinct and non-reoccurring scheme, like the limestone is alleged here, with a built-in termination point and with no indication in the complaint that the defendants will have or will engage in any future unlawful RICO conduct, there is no RICO claim. There is no pattern of racketeering activity. That's a fundamental problem. If it doesn't walk and talk like a RICO, it's not a RICO, and I think that's what this court said in Gamboa. And that's precisely the situation that their complaint has pled. They've alleged that for years and years, the Village of Lamont and the other defendants have attempted to destroy limestone economically. That's been the thrust of their injury back in 1992 when we defended that claim in 1999.
What about their argument that the brochure is a new injury?
Well, I agree with Your Honor's analysis, if I understood you correctly, that the brochure doesn't contain any misrepresentations in the first place. There's no claim in that brochure that Lamont owned the property or claimed to own the property. No clout on any title whatsoever. Limestone's property isn't even identified in that brochure. You'd have to know that they own that property. It's not even identified. At most, it's a conceptual map of what Lamont and the Park District would like to see happen. It's no different than a comprehensive plan. If you look at a municipality's comprehensive plan, you plan for the future. You put colors on a map. You say, one day we'd like to see...
But does that imply that they intended to condemn it? Condemn limestone's interest?
No.
To create the... How else would they create the park?
Well, they can create the park around limestone's property. I mean, it's a conceptual idea. It's no different than a comprehensive plan.
How much of the... of the map of this picture is occupied by limestone?
There's a certain portion of it. Limestone's property on the north side of the canal is mostly a water-filled quarry. I would say probably 95% of their property.
When we look at the brochure, are we looking north or south?
The property they're talking about is north of the canal.
North of the ship canal?
That's no north of the I&M canal. If you look at the map, you'll see Main Street there.
Yes.
And then you'll see right above Main Street, you'll see a few water-filled quarries there, and then you'll see the I&M canal, which is the narrow waterway that runs through there. Now the property that they're referring to is the property north of the I&M canal, and 90% of it is that quarry that sits right there. That's most of limestone's property north of the canal.
The quarry.
The quarry is, yes, the water-filled quarry. So what the Village of Lamont did here is essentially create a conceptual plan for a park plan for that area, because it is a beautiful area. It's quiet, it's pristine, and they wanted to create some sort of recreational, passive recreational in this particular area.
What does limestone want to do with the quarry?
At one point in time, and this was the subject of the litigation I defended back in 1992, they wanted to create a commercial marina. They wanted to essentially put boat slips and cut a channel.
The quarry is a lake?
It's a lake. It's a water field. Yeah, it's essentially
a lake. They must have some land along it, not just on
the quarry. Yeah, there is some land around the quarry that is theirs. Yes,
yeah.
That is. But there's no misrepresentation made in that brochure whatsoever. And beyond that, you have the aspect of the complaint alleging that somehow potential purchasers were misled by this map. That's pure speculation. I mean, there's no facts alleged in the complaint that any potential purchasers were in fact misled and driven away by what was allegedly misrepresented in this particular map. The same goes for the 2003 emails. So if we just focus on the 2003 acts and we say, okay, those are the acts that occurred within the statute of limitations for RICO, these emails between Porter and the purported agent of Limestone, Edward Andreziak, they're qualified. Everything that Porter said in those emails was, look, we're trying to get an appraisal, we'll get an appraisal, but if you have a better offer, go ahead and take it. Don't hesitate. That smacks more of an arm's length transaction than it does Porter stringing Limestone along in order to make them carry their property longer and incur more charges or incur more costs for carrying their property. So our position is that neither the brochure nor the emails constitute a RICO, underlying RICO offense, because there's no misrepresentation made in those emails whatsoever. I'd like to address for a moment the equal protection claim and the statute of limitations defense made as to that. The essential argument there is that the Village of Lamont in 1999 failed to maintain the access road, and the access road was the issue that was presented in the prior litigation, and we litigated that for years as to what rights Limestone had to use this road. And the Illinois Appellate Court recognized some limited rights. In 1999, Limestone sued the Village of Lamont in early 99 in state court asking for a writ of mandamus to compel the village to maintain the road. In that lawsuit, they claimed that their development rights were being materially harmed by Lamont's failure to maintain the road. At that time, K.A. Steele had a guardhouse up, and they had a lift arm, and because they had to protect access to their particular plant, which is located just adjacent to this access road. Limestone's complaint, as I understand it, is that by failing to maintain the road and allowing K.A. Steele to maintain the guardhouse, the Village of Lamont and the individual Lamont defendants violated his equal protection rights. Again, you look at what the accrual is. The accrual is when they knew or should have known of their injury. By their own complaint, they admit that they knew about their injury in as late as 1999. Excuse me, November of 1999.
Are there any maps in the record besides this, the one in the brochure?
I don't believe there is. I think the current record does not contain a map. I'm trying to think about our motion to dismiss that we filed. I don't think there is, Your Honor. In any event, what they've invoked here is the continuing violation doctrine, claiming that because the Village of Lamont and K.A. Steele, I'll take Village of Lamont first, because they started maintaining the road until late 2003, after Limestone entered into a contract to sell their property, at that time K.A. Steele removed their guardhouse, that fell within the statute of limitations, thus allowing them to proceed with their equal protection claim. I think that argument turns the accrual rule for Section 1983 claims on its head. I think it's flawed. The accrual begins when the injury first occurred, not when the defendants terminated their conduct. It's when the defendants began their conduct and an injury occurred and Lamont knew about it, or rather Limestone knew about it. I think this case is analogous to the Pitts v. City of Kankakee case and the Clark v. Braidwood case, both Seventh Circuit decisions. And it's the same injury that they allege in their mandamus lawsuit. It's the same injury they've alleged in their 1992 lawsuit. In fact, when Limestone bought their property in 1989, they bought it without any title insurance as to access. That was not insured by the title company. Limestone knew at that time that the access road was unimproved, and they knew that it had been unimproved since the Village of Lamont purchased the I&M Canal and 90 feet on each side back since 1970. And Limestone also knew at that time that K.A. Steele had a plant out there with a security gate and a guardhouse and so forth. So they knew these things existed for years and years and years. Yet they waited, at least if you take the 1999 date, they waited almost 6 years, 6 years to file their lawsuit, almost 6 years. There was no fresh wrong. There was no conduct that occurred after November of 1999 that created a new injury. It's the same injury that they had back in 1999 as it was in 2005 when they filed their lawsuit. Your Honors, I think I've addressed I think I've addressed all the arguments.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bersani. Mr. Wimmer, how much time does he have? 4 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to address the last point first, the equal protection accrual issue. What we've alleged is that the village, and this is paragraph 21 of count 2, the village of Lamont omitted to perform necessary maintenance on said access road that said defendant performed on all other public highways within its jurisdiction up to and including 2004. So, I mean, if you have a village truck like they do sometimes in the spring with tire going around filling potholes and they don't go to your block, they go everywhere else within the village, that's a continuing disparate treatment that continues into 2004, which was less than 2 years before the original complaint was filed in August of 2005. What we're complaining about is a difference of treatment by the government, and that difference in treatment didn't...
What if the difference in treatment started 100 years ago and continues to the present? You can wait 100 years to sue?
No, but you can sue for the difference in treatment that occurred within the 2 years.
In 100 years to sue.
You can certainly recover, and we cited a case.
Well, I don't think you can do that.
Okay, Judge,
one of the arguments for the statute of limitations is that evidence gets stale over.
Yeah. I don't think it's stale with respect to the difference of treatment that...
Of course it is. Look,
occurred within the last
suppose 100 years ago the village of Lamont decided it didn't like the family that, you know, became limestone. So it said, we're never going to clean their streets or what have you. They're going to pick up trash 100 years ago. And nothing happens. You wait 100 years, and now you say, well, this is unbearable, so we're going to sue. Well, but the evidence that would bear on whether this was a violation of equal protection,
Judge,
would go back 100 years.
Judge, we're relying on the sheriff versus Ball.
Look, I don't care what you're relying on. That's nonsense, right? The 100 years, that's nonsense.
With all due respect, I think as long as you're seeking damages for injury...
No, because how on earth are you going to litigate the intentions of the village of Lamont 100 years ago?
You're not going to. You're going to litigate...
No, you have to, but that's pertinent to their liability.
You're going to litigate their intentions within the two-year framework. It said, where repeated and measurable invasion of plaintiff's rights occurs both outside the statutory period and also within it, the fact that some of the injury and damage occurs...
Maybe their only intent is to continue what they've always done. They don't have any malice toward... Limestone, they've just been doing it for the last 100 years, right?
That's
the current people don't know anything about where this started.
That's a matter of proof, not pleading.
Matter of proof of what happened 100 years ago.
The other thing I wanted to mention was on the issue of enterprise, and I have only 1 minute, but I did want to make a couple of points. We have cited cases indicating that an enterprise can consist of several government entities. And in light of the notice pleading regimen, I think the fact that we've identified those entities that constitute the enterprise...
So, because, look, you have to take account. The notice pleading is now under a lot of pressure from the Supreme Court's decision in Bell versus Twombly, which says that, we're talking about antitrust, but RICO is very similar, that before you put defendants to the burden of discovery... You have to have enough facts in your complaint to make it plausible
right.
that there's some violation here.
Right.
And this brochure is too thin. Why haven't you superimposed on this map a map of your property so we have some sense of what we're talking about?
It's alleged in the complaint, Judge, that the amenities that are depicted on the map are on the property, and that fact has to be accepted as true.
If you superimposed a map of your property on this brochure, what would it look like? Do you own the whole thing?
It would look like where they've put these village welcome center and these pathways is my client's property. That's what it would look like.
So why haven't you given us a map so we could see that?
Well, I've alleged it, and it has to be accepted as true.
No, it doesn't have to be accepted after Bell versus Twombly. You have to have something plausible. So if we look at this map, where is your property? Where are your property lines?
Judge, the property includes, as Mr. Bersani said, the area, the land north of this canal, which includes all this area where the pathways and the visitors welcome center are. All
but there are no
here.
Pathways or visitor centers on the map.
I believe there is, Judge. It may be hard to come to see printing didn't copy real well in the black and white, but perhaps if you get the original.
Well, great.
Complaint.
Where's the original?
Pardon me?
Where's the original?
In the court file, Your Honor. But we have alleged that there is a visitor's...
Where are your property lines? Can you describe
the property
them?
Lines are not depicted, Judge. We allege that...
Are they? You must know where they are.
Judge, we allege that the
property... Where are your property lines? Would you just tell me? On this
I don't know exactly where the property lines are. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wimmer and Mr. Bersani.